50,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the Ides of October 2006, and you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
What side am I on?
You're on my right side.
Okay, and then
Steve is on my farther right side.
What side is Steve?
You guys are going to have to move around in there just so it's correct.
Yeah, what side is Rob on?
He's on my right. I know, but
Steve's over on Dave's side.
Yeah, but he's on my farther side.
Oh, okay.
You got to come around.
You're right and far
I wanna
right.
I want to know what side you're on.
So I'm the far right?
You're the far right.
You got his backside?
That makes me the far left.
Yeah.
You must have his backside.
Yeah, I'm outside. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're way outside. But we're going to be bringing you all kinds of interesting news, views, stuff you can use. We'll start with two pieces of news. One is about my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Very good. And it's been down for a while. A whole bunch of little minor things that all kind of came together. It's like the snowstorm in Buffalo this week. Whole bunch of minor little things all came together to keep it down for a while, but it's mostly up now.
Same with our Jesse Group website.
Jesse Group website.
We must have been on the same server as you.
Yes, you were.
Oops.
Server died. Things got moved. My stuff was screwed up. It's getting all fixed now. But it was, you know, just a little confluence, a kind of a perfect storm to keep my computer, my system.
Keep you busy.
Down. Yeah. But it's coming back up now. Thanks to everybody who was polite and waited. And all those of you who weren't polite, thank you anyway. or some other you phrase. I don't remember.
Most of the folks understood.
No, they were all good. Nobody really was angry or upset. And that's great. Yeah. People understand this stuff happens.
Yeah.
And speaking of stuff happens, there's those of you who use PowerPoint, there is an unpatched vulnerability in Microsoft Office 2003 PowerPoint that has become publicly available. Yes, it's another zero-day threat. What that means is the day that the flaw is discovered, there's a threat out for it. The new vulnerability is rated as highly critical by the security firm Secunia, which describes the flaw as being caused by an unspecified error when processing PowerPoint presentations. Now, as is always the case, people have looked into this. VeriSign, for example, has looked into it with their iDefense business unit. They said attacks against the flaw are increasingly likely now that the public exploit code is out there. Again, this is the kind of thing that lets you do whatever you want to, whatever they want to do to your machine. They can put in a back door. They can own it. They can use it to send out porn, to send out spam, to do whatever they want with it. So unless, once again, folks, unless you absolutely know that this thing was sent to you by somebody who created it themselves.
And even that, if it comes from someone you know, that's not enough anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And you have verified that they sent it to you on purpose and that they created it from scratch. I wouldn't open it until there's a fix out for it. All of the antivirus companies are working on that.
Now, this is different than the PowerPoint flaw we talked about last week, right?
Yes, it is. This is a different zero-day PowerPoint flaw. So there's really a couple out there. I know a lot of you like to send around slideshows, cute, funny, interesting slideshows. You know what? For the next week, don't do it. Wait until, and for God's sake, don't open them yourself. Wait until you see what the you get your next update from your antivirus software and see what that has to say about the file before you start sending things like that around. That's kind of important. All right. That's how you get to be a good net citizen. You don't send stuff out willy-nilly. You check A, that it's legitimate, and B, that it's clean before you send it out. All right. Our first caller this week is Stan from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
I think I have a problem with my monitor.
Okay.
By the way, thanks for your program. I enjoy listening to it every week.
It's our pleasure, Stan. Thank you so much.
Hey, I need to know whether my monitor is dead or not.
Okay.
Okay. What happens is that I used to shut it off when I wasn't using it or away from home for any period of time, just to monitor, but keep the computer running.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday I came in and I turned it back on and nothing happened. No picture.
All right. So does the light go from green to orange?
Okay.
Or from orange to green?
What happens is I shut the computer off. I turn the monitor back on.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to orange. And when I turn the computer on, it goes to green momentarily, and then it shuts off completely. No light at all.
That's probably the monitor. The only way to be sure is try that computer with a different monitor and that monitor on a different computer.
If you could switch the two, you know, just temporarily, or take it over to a friend and say the monitor, and take it over to a friend's and just have them test it on theirs, it'll eliminate one of the problems.
Well, the problem is it's a 19-inch cathode ray tube monitor.
Oh, that's a big one.
Got a friend with a laptop. Bring the laptop to your house and try that monitor on it.
Oh, I've got a laptop.
Well, then good. Yeah. Plug it in.
Yeah, hook it up. Now, you might have to do a key sequence.
It's usually F7.
Or function F7.
To switch between internal monitor and external monitor and then both monitors. It's a free position.
Yeah, if it comes down to that, then you'll know whether the monitor is good or not.
Okay, but you more or less think that it's the monitor, not anything in the computer.
Well, this is the first check we're going to make. It's likely the monitor, but this is the way you tell. Plug it into a different machine. If it works there, then you've got a separate problem. If it doesn't work there, then you know it's the monitor. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and with me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Give us a call. This is Soundbites. If you're in the 585 area code, the number is 222-1180. Outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers can just hit star 1180. Before we get back to the phones, cyber crooks are faking electronic greeting cards. A gang of cyber criminals is using fake electronic greeting cards from various providers like Yahoo and others to infect thousands of users with keylogger malware. They're using them to steal credit card numbers, bank account usernames, and passwords. The attacks have hit account holders at nearly every bank, although the total number of affected users was unclear. The card appears to be from one of the major e-card companies, so it's assumed to be safe, despite the user not recognizing the sender's name on the card. The e-card spammers have been targeting users in Australia, Europe, North America, and Asia, and spoofing electronic greeting cards from a variety of providers. So there's your second one of the day, folks. First, don't open PowerPoint slides that anybody sends you unless you can verify they created them themselves and they sent them to you on purpose. And don't open e-cards from anybody unless you have verified that they sent them to you on purpose.
Animated greeting card or greeting card.
Right.
Some of the services call it different things.
Right. But a greeting card thing. Hi, you just got a greeting card from. I have a friend who sends them to me all the time. It's very sweet. Of course, I don't care. I'm opening them on Linux. I don't really care. But she, you know, she sends them all the time. It's very sweet. But now you have to be a little more careful. That's two things to be careful about this week.
Don't open any file someone sends to them. We're going to have to go back to the old floppy days of email or postal mailing a floppy.
And even then, you can't be sure it
too
isn't.
Too sure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You just need to be more careful, and you need to start. We need to figure out a way to verify better. There are ways to do it. It's just not cheap, and that's why nobody's done it. Our next caller, Ray from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
My father-in-law's got a Gateway computer, Windows XP, and it sits, when he boots it up, it just sits at the Gateway logo screen, and then this message, I could hear things clicking like it's trying to boot up, and then it sits there. Then this message finally comes up saying, hard drive was not found, consult the manual, boot failure, system halted.
You got a hard drive issue.
Or
a hard drive controller. Yeah.
More likely the hard drive.
Well, if you can hear the clicking, it's probably the hard drive.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of times on most of the PCs, when you get that company logo, the Gateway logo, the Dell logo, the HP logo, you can hit escape and it will clear that logo and you'll see the real boot messages behind the logo, you know, where it counts the memory and says different things about the screen. But it could be the hard drive. It's probably the hard drive failing, but it could be just the hard drive reseeking as something else has gone wrong. We've seen that a couple of times,
that's
but
true.
It's probably the hard drive.
Yeah, most likely it's the hard drive because most of the manufacturers just set all the hard drives to auto. In other words, auto detect. Back in the old days, you used to have to put in the heads of cylinders.
Cylinder sectors and heads. I had to do that the other day. And all that stuff.
But
my assistant
nowadays,
was, what's that?
Yeah.
Most of them are just set to auto. So 10 to 1 odds, and you're hearing a clicking, it's the hard drive.
Okay, and so that means I probably got to get a new hard drive for this.
Yep.
And then he hopefully has all the system disks.
Yep.
That's the next problem, yeah.
What operating system was he
running? It was XP, but he had, you know, it's a gateway. He had bought it, and I've asked him to see if he can find all the disks.
He's
for
probably, it probably won't say XP on it. It'll say the gateway. Gateway was very good about
system
sending,
installation.
Sending a gateway system restore CD.
Okay.
That's what you're going to look for.
And a lot of the companies use, they don't send CDs anymore. They put it on a hidden partition on the hard drive, and you have to go into the restore partition. So if the hard drive has failed, that's gone.
Okay, this is a probably about 5 years old computer.
Yeah, I would also hope that your father-in-law, of course, so it's never you, right? It's always my father-in-law, some friend, whatever. Yeah, fine. But I hope your father-in-law has backups because the data are probably gone too.
Yeah, we've tried to teach him to do that, so hopefully he does.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck. All right, our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I've got a little concern, and I'm kind of nervous about it. I have to have work done on my computer. I've got iTunes. I've got a lot of stuff on there, videos and all that I have bought. I heard of a product called CopyPad. Does anybody know if that's good, reliable, or what?
CopyPod?
Yeah, CopyPod. The guys on the forum said it's good, but I just wanted to get your impression.
Oh, there's several different programs like this. The one I use is called iPod Rip, and there's another one called Centui, which is iTunes backwards. It isn't really something that you'll need at the moment. What it does is if your computer dies and you lose your hard drive, you've now lost all the music that's on your iPod.
Right.
For music you've purchased, you'll have to repurchase it unless you've backed it up somewhere else. So programs like CopyPod and iPod Rip allow you to copy the music from your iPod back to your computer.
Uh-huh.
So that you don't have to go back and repurchase everything or re-rip all your CDs. The other problem you might run into is the way iTunes works with the digital rights management. It's keyed to your logic board, specifically your Ethernet controller address.
Yeah.
So if you need a new logic board in your computer, then iTunes will think it's a new computer, and it will count as one of the five computers you're allowed to play the songs on. So one of the recommendations from Apple is that when you need to send your computer in for repair, deauthorize that computer inside of iTunes in case it gets a new logic board and you don't lose one of your five. But for everyone, you should always back up the music that you've purchased from iTunes because if you lose the file on your hard drive or you lose the file on your iPod, you have to buy it again.
So the best way to do that is just copy it somewhere.
Right.
You
can
copy iTunes directory.
Right, the whole iTunes music folder, put it onto another computer.
Yeah.
Now, in a lot of times, your iPod is your backup. So if your main computer fails, you can use a program like CopyPod.
Well, but in her case, she's got a bunch of stuff on the hard drive that's not on the iPod.
Yeah, well, I could
copy that folder.
Right,
to,
just copy that iTunes folder to an external hard drive.
Yeah. Okay, I've got an external hard drive. I don't know how good it is. I mean, I got it from a local dealer, and it's one of these cases where you can put. He explained to me it's a case, and you can put in different sizes.
Right.
Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Enclosures.
Okay, I've got one, and he so that's good. He said I could take that out and put a different size in, as opposed to buying another external hard drive. It's just a little.
Yeah. Most chassis let you do that anyway.
Okay. Yeah. And I've never used one, and I'm kind of scared to use it.
It acts like just any regular hard drive. You can just buying the hard drive and the case separately, so you can pull your 80 gig hard drive out and put a 250 gig hard drive in if you want to.
But usually they come pre-assembled. You don't go switching.
Well, no, you can
buy
it.
What size is the hard drive in it now?
I think I asked them to put an 80 gig in there right now.
Well, and how big is your iTunes folder?
I've got maybe 700 and some songs and maybe 50 videos.
Well, that ought to fit on an 80 gig drive.
Yeah. The bottom of the iTunes window will tell you how much file space that is, too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And as long as it's less than 80 gig, just grab that whole iTunes folder, drag it over to that external drive, wait until it finishes copying. Now you've got a copy of a lot of your stuff on your iPod, a copy of all your stuff on your hard drive, and a copy of all that stuff on the external drive. So you've got it in three places. That ought to do you.
I know it's okay because I got a 60-gig iPod and it fits on there.
Oh, you're all good then.
Okay, so it's okay to, so it's safe because I'm not sure how to back things up to an external hard drive.
It's just a copy.
Just drag the folder from your internal hard drive to the external hard drive.
Okay.
Just drag the folder.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate this. Mm-hmm.
It's our pleasure, Linda. Thank you. Now, this is an important thing that everybody should know about. People are buying external drives a lot nowadays. Yes. And all it basically is a hard drive in its own box.
It's a giant floppy disk.
Yeah, essentially, it is. Mm-hmm.
And people remember how to copy to a floppy disk.
That's exactly
it's the same
right.
Way.
It's the same exact thing. It's just a hard drive in a case, and that case may or may probably will plug into the wall, but it will also has a USB port, and you plug it into the back of your computer. Now you've got a whole new hard drive, and that's all it is. You can copy to and from it just like you copy to and from floppies or from hard drive
and
to hard drive or to your USB drive.
It'll show up in XP the minute you plug it in.
It'll show up. It takes a minute, found new hardware, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden, bang, there it is. So that kind of thing works with no trouble at all. So I would suggest in a lot of cases, you do that. It's a good idea. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Rob Linton. Rob Jason is coming in. He's going to do the news and the weather and the sports and all the very important stuff that you tune into. You might turn into Wham. I don't know how much you listen to need to do that, but you tune into Wham every day to hear that stuff. And we'll be back on the other side of the news. We're going to have a lot more interesting stuff. We've got what's going on in the forums. We've got more news and other interesting stuff like that. So stay tuned. Because you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that, say it with me, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we've got more news for you. Voice over IP, or VoIP as they call it, an FCC ruling requiring voice providers to give law enforcement agencies wiretapping capabilities is legal, according to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. What's happened is that for years, it's been legal, for at least a couple of years, it's been legal for the FCC to wiretap phones in the United States, but it has not been legal for them to do the same with VoIP. And the government argued that unless they could do that, then the surveillance efforts were compromised. And so the FCC ruling now requires VoIP providers that provide a substitute service for traditional telephone service to comply with the 1994 telephone wiretapping law called the Communications Assistant for Law Enforcement Act. So those of you who've been using your VoIP system because nobody can eavesdrop on it, well, that's not true anyway. Voice over IP, there's a great program called VOMIT. Voice over misconfigured internet telephones.
Yeah.
And you put it on, like, for example, I've actually done this. I sit in a place where there's wireless and I suck up all the conversations and it automatically finds all the VoIP packets and recombines them into a WAV file so I can hear the conversation.
I like how the law for law enforcement assistance sounds so much nicer than legalized wiretapping.
Yes, it does. Because but it is legalized and that's what counts. All right, our next caller is Dave from Bath, New York. How are things in Bath, Dave? Dave?
Hello.
Dave, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
Yes, I'm a student at RIT, and Mr. Piccioni mentioned I should call and give you a question.
No! Mr. Piccioni actually had me in his class the other day and was telling all his students to call up and stump us. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I had a problem with Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
And the dictionary wasn't working properly or whatnot, so I decided I was just going to reinstall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everything went to heck in a handbasket once I did that. I've finally been able to get it back up, and it does work again. I was able to reinstall it.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep getting these messages from a messenger service saying to go to registerinpro.com cleaner.com or go to registercleaner.com or go, and these messages keep popping up about every 4 or 5 minutes.
Because you are infested with spyware.
Yeah. Well, those are not real Messenger messages.
Well, they are, right. Just not from a real source.
Right.
I mean, I ran SpyBot and AVG and all the different anti-spy things I had. In fact, AVG is what actually made it so that I was able to get Microsoft Word to operate again. I mean, the files were
the next one you need to run is AdAware to remove the spyware. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing you need to do, Dave. Go to securitytango.com.
Securitytango.com.
And there's a button there called Let's Dance. Click on that, print out the page, and follow it step by step. Do not skip any of the steps. If you do, you're not dancing a tango anymore. You're just stumbling around. One of the things that it will have you do is turn off your system restore. Often these things hide in the system restore area. By turning it off, you will kill the hidden version. Then you clean out your whole machine. Then if you want to turn it on again and turn on your system restore and make a backup point, that's fine. But don't do it until after you know your system is completely clean.
Okay.
That's where a lot of the problem comes in. People run SpyBot, they run AdAware, they run all this. It's great. It's great to do. But unless you are doing it in the right order and turning off certain things before you do, a lot of the newer, more sophisticated viruses will hide in certain areas and just reinfect your machine the minute you stop running the AdAware program. So this should clean things up for you.
Well, very well.
And you can tell your teacher that you didn't stump us. Thanks, Dave. Our next caller is Dave again. Come on, Dave. This time you're in Lima, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi there.
That's quite a trip. You ran all the way from Bath to Lima just to call us twice?
It's amazing.
And you're
unbelievable. And Dave is here in the studio with us simultaneously.
I've got an HP Pavilion ZT1135. It's been giving me problems, but I seem to have fixed all of them. I had to remove half my memory to make it work right and all that. But what's happened about a week and a half ago is all of a sudden my sound just left. There's no sound at all, and I've all the device drivers. It says it's working properly. All my volumes are unmuted. Everything and I can't find a problem. So I'm wondering is this a motherboard issue that the thing is slowly melting or
do you have if you're not able to run with a lot of the memory, why? Because one of the chip slots is bad.
Well, I just don't know. I had the thing gave us problems right from the beginning, and so I put in I put in another processor, a 1.33 from a 1.2, and I put in a new cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And then I increased the memory to a gig, and everything seemed to be working okay for a little while, and then it was just randomly shutting off and freezing up, and so I removed one of the memory cards, so now it's just half a gig. And now it works fine.
But everything was
working great. Until,
was it matched memory?
Yeah, they were exactly the same. Both cards were exactly the same.
Well, that's the primary problem right now is losing, and you know the speakers work, they're turned on, they're plugged into the right place, all of that stuff.
Yeah, everything there is working. I had an external speaker, but it doesn't work either way, and it just stopped. It used to work great.
I'm thinking you've got more problems than just your volume. Dave, let me suggest that you take this system into a qualified
have them do a diagnostic
place and have them diagnose the whole system.
Okay.
Because you may have more problems than that. Now, it may come down to the problem is your power supply. It could be the power in your house. Could be any one of 100 things. But until you get somebody actually
to see it
to look
screen.
At it, it could be any one of a million things. And I don't want to waste your time with that. But the reality is that you've got probably a bunch of stuff going on with that system.
Now, is that a costly kind of thing to have that diagnosed?
No, I mean, we charge like $30.
Oh, okay.
For the diagnosis.
Yeah,
then,
right.
Then he'll tell you what's wrong with it, if anything, and then you can go from there. But the diagnosis itself, for example, from somebody like Dave or somebody like Steve, is not terribly expensive And certainly, you know, letting a professional do it with their equipment in the long run is a better deal all the way around anyway. All right, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. It's 40 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to Soundbites at 44 minutes after the hour.
We were just discussing the problems, because I run into the same issue when the husband and wife bring in their computer separately.
And don't communicate
about what they want done and how much they want to spend on it.
Yeah, right.
And it's our fault when the husband spends more than the wife wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
I don't go there.
Yeah, we don't do domestic quarrels. You're on your own for that one. No.
Don't even want to be a part of that one.
Intel, on the other hand, is launching quad-core chips on November 13th.
Ooh.
Quad-core chips. Intel's bringing its quad-core chips to market in a new line of Hewlett-Packard workstations due to be introduced on November 13th. The launch would mean that Intel brings quad-core processors to market before AMD. AMD, of course, plans to release their own quad-core chips in the middle of 2007. They claim that their monolithic design is superior to Intel's plan, which essentially glues two dual-core chips together, but without having any hardware to test, well, we can't tell whether this is going to be a...
Well, this is the thing. You know, they were more or less put up against the wall, both Intel and AMD,
yep,
to get something out for the market for the holidays, because they were really, really hoping on Microsoft to have Vista out there, so that was going to be their big holiday push. Well, Microsoft said, yeah, nope, not until maybe spring of next year, which I still wonder. And as I've told you last week, I'm not that impressed, folks. You see these different write-ups about Vista.
Right.
Yeah, and it's going to have all the bells and whistles in it. But you know what? It doesn't look that much different than the current
Windows XP. Unless you've got a really high-end video card, and then all it is eye candy. But if you're willing to pay a couple of $100 for eye candy, God bless you.
But here's the thing, though. You get the eye candy, and then for you gamers, DirectX 10 isn't going to work.
Right, it's going to be slower.
Yeah.
There's a lot of concern over the license agreements that's been circulating, that you're only allowed to transfer the license once. So if you buy a copy of Vista, you can transfer it to another computer once and then never again.
Right. So if you buy a machine and the motherboard dies, you replace the motherboard, and then 2 years from now you want to buy a new computer? Oh well, new Vista.
Or you want to go to a bigger hard drive. So your motherboard dies after a year. And then, say, a month later after that, the hard drive craps out on you.
Right.
There you go. There's three times. Three strikes. You're out.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see what that's...
It ain't cheap either.
No, it isn't.
New version of Vista, what it's going to cost you...
Well, there's six different versions, and who knows which one's going to... You actually need the home user level.
But there's one that won't even concern us because it's not even in our market. It's for the watered-down version, which is for overseas, which Microsoft was complied to put out, with the everything's not built into it.
Right, to the European Union.
Yeah, so one of the versions there is definitely we won't even see.
Right.
And then some of the other things that I've been reading so far, the home versus the... They got all different cutesy names.
Well, yeah, there's four versions now. There's home, server, home, pro, server, advanced server, data center. Five versions now. Didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Right, exactly.
So who knows what the next, but well, yeah, and most of our customers, in fact, we've had several customers buying PCs now to make sure they get XP on it, because they don't want to have to go through the conversion mess and what programs aren't going to work when Vista comes out.
Right. Most people use their machines for real stuff, and they don't want to be in the position where for 2 weeks their machine is down because they're trying to install a new operating system. I just want my machine to work every day.
And Vista takes a long time to upgrade. See, it's or just be install. We did it, and I'll bet you we were close to... A little over 3.5 hours to 4 hours just to...
And you were using a fairly fast machine with enough RAM.
Yeah, it was a gig of memory.
Right.
It's going to be the early adopters, and the computer geeks are going to load it and buy it loaded on their machine. the average people aren't going to bother with it until it comes pre-installed on a new computer.
Well, here's
and
the
corporate
problem.
People aren't going to want to mess with it because their network's going to go
down. But here's
the
problem. Microsoft has stated many times that the minute Vista is available, they are no longer supporting XP. That means if you want security updates, you move to Vista with a gun to your head or you're done. We're going to take a quick break. It is 49 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lintz, and me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Glenn.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. Hey, Nick, you got any more of that Lonsberry Pie in her?
Oh, the Lonsberry Pie. How can you not? How can you not? Really? Seriously. All right, give us a call. It's 222-1180 in the 585 area code, 295-1180 in the 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's *1180. A security researcher is raising concerns about a digital restriction management feature in Microsoft's new Vista operating system that he claims may make it easy for malicious code authors to block virus programs from removing their stuff. There is a new Vista feature dubbed Protected Processes, which provides digital restriction management functionality in Vista. And what it does is it says, okay, this particular thing cannot be touched by any other process, including someone with administrative rights. So it completely blocks the entire machine from getting access to that thing. Now, all the hackers have to do is break into that. And if they have that protected process status, then you cannot remove the virus. Everybody is saying this is an incredibly bad idea. And we'll see what actually happens with that. Microsoft says they're aware that that's possible, and they're taking steps to make sure it doesn't happen.
But going back for a second, though, you know, we were talking about how you were saying, you know, Microsoft is going to pass the edict that once, you know, Vista comes out, XP is no longer going to be supported. Well, I think you're going to see a big uprising because, you know, just like they did with Windows 98, they extended that longer than even some of the other operating systems, because to sit there and force people to buy, upgrade their software or hardware just because Gates is putting out a new system, and the average user, say home user, if he's running XP right now,
well, it's
it's
that 5 to 7 year thing that XP Service Pack 1 has already dropped off of some support,
right?
Because it's so old,
right?
And so you have to be using XP Service Pack 2 because Microsoft has taken so long to get Vista to market.
The other part of the problem is Microsoft doesn't make any money supporting old operating systems, so they're just not going to do it. They only make money if you buy new stuff.
But this might be the one that if he does really, you know, push it, a lot of folks might be pushed over to Linux.
Well, that's what they're saying. Linux and Apple have a window of opportunity here. If you're going to have to relearn everything, and I mean everything, because you've seen it, it's completely different. The operating system is it's not Windows. They call it Windows, but every single thing is different.
Just
and
the
if you're
going
to have to learn a new operating system anyway, why not learn one that's free in terms of Linux or one that everybody else stole from in terms of the Mac? Why not move to something that's a little less restrictive?
Well, and the other thing is taking that current machine they have with, say, the gig of memory or anything else and putting Unix on it, is going to be more powerful than the current XP is
and
now.
And I'll tell you what, there's nothing that the new user interface does that I haven't been able to do in Linux anyway, and that the Mac doesn't do. Mac does most of it. Linux does most of it, but between the two of them, they do it all. There's nothing new that Microsoft is coming up with.
Someone put out a video of from Bill Gates' keynote at COMDEX last year, was it, when he was showing off the new features of Linux, of Vista.
Right.
And they superimposed a Macintosh screen showing off all these cool new features that Vista will have that the Mac has had for a couple of years now anyway.
Well, that's exactly my point. And either one of them already does all of this stuff, but thank God finally Microsoft has invented it. So we can have it.
But like I said, once you get the machine, and one, you're going to have to pay a bigger price for it because it needs more memory, bigger hard drive space, better graphics card, better sound card, everything there. Then you're going to have to turn around and, oh, by the way, upgrade all your other additional software.
Right, because your old software, a lot of it won't work anymore. So if you're going to do all of that, why not buy a Mac or buy a Linux box or just run Linux on the machine you've got and save yourself a bucket of money?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, people are beginning to wonder if that's something that they need to do, and we'll see. You know, the only thing that I have found in Vista that I can't find anywhere else, every single application can have its own sound levels settable. So
oh, that's nice.
That is nice. And mm-hmm. I do like that. That is the one thing I have not found anywhere else.
So your games don't blare out of the speaker.
Right. Or so that so that you can be listening to music at a certain volume, and then underneath it you'll hear the noise for your new email coming in or whatever, and it's a different volume. And that's nice. That's not worth the amount of money that I would have to spend to do this, but it does work, and that's what counts. So that's a nice thing.
Wrong button, Rob. Sorry.
Rob, was that a subtle hint, or you just...
No, it's this new voice guy. It's messed everything up.
Has it?
No, so not really. It's my fault. I got to blame it on somebody else, though.
So what you're saying is we're done.
You've got 20 seconds.
I've got 20 seconds to say that I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
He's Rob Linton in the back room.
Shaking
your
head.
We know that.
The bobble doll.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll
this
get
is really
shortly.
Professionally produced, I promise.
We believe you. That's why we have you in the booth, because we love you. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are indeed listening to Soundbites. If you're on the line, hang on. We'll get to you in just a moment. But I do want to give out this fascinating bit of news. For those of you who are waiting for Vista, as we talked about the last hour, Microsoft has already moved on, and what you're waiting for isn't what they're interested in providing. Windows Live is now the most important initiative at Microsoft, Steve Ballmer said. He is, of course, Microsoft's chief CEO, chief executive officer, and he said that at the Gartner Symposium and IT Expo on October the 10th. We're in a transition to software that is live. It will be click to run like a website. We believe in evolving to click to run. That is to say, instead of running stuff on your machine, you'll run them off a website. Windows Live is a growing collection of service add-ons for Windows. Windows Live Messenger, Windows Live Expo, doing online classifieds. There's about a dozen services currently in beta test. Ballmer said the most important thing is the live platform. So those of you who've been wondering what's been taking Vista so long, now you know, Microsoft doesn't care. They're more interested in Windows Live. And so that leads us to our question of the week. Every week on the Soundbites website, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, at soundbites.org, we do a poll question. Last week's was about Microsoft's proposed software protection plan. 255 of you voted, making it number 207 on the all-time hit list. Thank you. But this week's poll is about the applications being on your computer or on a web page. And it's simple. The question is, I'd rather have my office applications, and the choices are on my computer or through a web page. Currently, we have 78 people who have voted. 92% of you would prefer to have the office applications on their computer. Now, this is the big thing. We've got a choice here. You can either run... Now, there are a lot of places that do that. Writely.com is one. Google does Writely, and they also do their own spreadsheet program. There's a great place at Zoho.com where you can get word processing, spreadsheet, PowerPoint-type application. All that stuff is available right there. And so all you have to do is get online and run it. The problem, of course, is you have to be online. You have to have a network connection to do that. But Microsoft assumes that everybody on Earth has a very high-speed network connection all the time, and they would rather see you do stuff live off of their site rather than have it on your laptop, because it's a better pull in.
We're a little jealous this week at the Apple Cider meeting. We had a former member who now lives in Syracuse come in, and he's telling us in Syracuse they have fiber to the house. He gets 50 megabit to his house.
What does he pay for that?
$40 a month. Just like we pay for megabits here.
Lousy, no good stinker.
His upload speed is 20 megabits.
Oh, my golly. Oh, man.
Fiber to the house, please.
Please. We want fiber to the house. That's what I want. I'm willing to beta test that. Anybody wants to talk about fiber to the house, talk to me first. There's no question. But vote in our poll. And then when you're done with that, of course, there's... Give us your opinion. That may or may not be up. The website is continuing to go up and down a little bit, but that'll take you to my website, AskNick.com. Also, please remember to check out the Security Tango website. Lots of important and good stuff there, and you need to... I'm sorry. That's AskNick.com. Rob just had his little Scooby-Doo moment. He had his ears all perked up, and he was sitting up straight waiting for me to say, that's AskNick.com. And so we can do some sort of sound effect after.
Scooby-Doo's been on this week, and my son has watched it 100 million times.
Sure he has. But unfortunately, I didn't say. That's AskNick.com.
He's got two waiting, but the third one throws him.
He used
him.
Up all my sound effects. I'm standing here going, I got nothing.
All right, then in that case, I guess we'll go back to the phone since Rob's got nothing. Our next caller is Bob, patiently waiting in Canisius Lake. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good afternoon.
I don't think you're actually in Canisius Lake, are you?
Well, at this time of year, unfortunately, no.
Yo, I didn't think so.
Great show. I really learned.
Yeah, on the east side or west side?
We just read a note online that tears will damage cell phones. What about lake water?
Lake water is fresh water.
Yeah. Yes, the salt water in your tears will damage your cell phone.
The algae you got to keep out of the receiver.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. I have a desktop machine that's about 2 years old. Been working fine. Shut it down. Go to turn it back on. Nothing. Push the on button. Mm-hmm. No light. No, apparently no power.
Yeah.
Check the power strip.
Yep.
Check the power, switched out the power cord.
Yep.
Still nothing.
Probably the power supply.
Okay.
Yeah, they pop.
Did you say it works for a while and then shuts down?
No.
Okay.
No, it had been working fine.
Yeah. No, you just popped the power supply.
Okay.
If you're lucky, it's just the fuse. Although I tried replacing it. I had an 8-amp fuse in a power supply. It took a long time to find an 8-amp fuse in town.
Would have been a lot cheaper and faster to just replace the power supply.
Well, when I replaced the fuse, it blew immediately, so I put the new power
supply
in.
There you go.
Yeah. Easier and cheaper. Just get another power supply.
Not a big deal?
No.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome, sir. Our next caller, Art from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Art. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
A couple weeks ago, just to go back to one of your callers, I would agree, take your computer to a professional.
Thank you.
I had a laptop that was had some loud fans, and when I went in to clean out the heatsink, I fried the processor.
Uh-huh.
So replacement cost for the processor was less than buying a new laptop. But what I'm interested in knowing is how difficult is it to take the hard drive out of the old laptop and make it a portable laptop?
You just got to get a portable hard drive.
It depends. Some laptops, the hard drive is really easy to get to under a couple of screws. Some laptops, you have to tear it completely apart.
Yeah, and what you've got to do is you've got to get the enclosure that will handle a laptop.
Two and a half inch drive.
Two and a half inch drive.
Yeah, once you get out of the laptop, it's easy.
They make them.
Yeah.
There are,
there are also conversion kits.
Yeah, conversion kits to put it in an enclosure.
So they just drop in? There's no...
Right, yeah. It's a standard 2.5 inch IDE interface. And you can either get a smaller... The 2.5 inch enclosures are often physically a lot smaller because they can be.
But make sure the adapter that you're going to hook it up, because the... There's a different adapter for hooking it up than a stand. These enclosures, 99% of them are for standard hard drives.
3.5 inch drives.
That go into a desktop, not a laptop. So you've got to make sure that when you get it, it will accept the laptop hard drives.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Good luck. Yeah, I'm more and more thinking about I need some sort of external. But I'd rather have it attached right to the network, not to one of the PCs.
You can get network ones.
That's what I want. Mm-hmm. That's what I want.
We've sold a lot of the LaCie external hard drives, a good name brand for backup. And they have an Ethernet disk. It looks exactly like a regular external hard drive. And it's the same size, which is interesting. But it's got an Ethernet jack on it. And it has an embedded Linux server.
Right, so it shows up right on the network as a drive.
As a network drive, yeah. And I'm so desperately want to wait for the warranty to expire so I can tear it apart and find that little Linux computer, because the hard drive isn't any bigger than a regular hard drive.
Right.
So where's the Linux computer?
They actually make a Linux computer that fits in one of those Ethernet tunnel things, those little female-to-female plugs.
Wow.
In between it is a Linux box, so you can do all kinds of things with that. Yeah. Gumstix.com, GUMSTIX.com, I think, is where it is. Our next caller is Dale from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dale. What's your question?
Hey, great program, week after
Thank
week.
Thank you.
I'm having some problems booting up. Friday night, I was going through my email, and it was going a little slow and whatever, and all of a sudden, Windows or Microsoft indicated it had some updates that it wanted to download for me. So I downloaded those, and it was like midnight. And so I turned off the computer, and Saturday morning I turn it on, and all it does is it will put on, you know, like the resolution notice, and then the Windows loading window comes on with the little blue slashes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I get Windows is checking file C. It needs to check for the continuity of the
right.
FAT
yep.
32.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through all of that, and it says that it's verified. They've checked and found no problems. And I wait a few seconds for it to continue, and what it does is it just pops into restart again. And it continues on that.
Are you able to get into safe mode?
I have tried that with the F8, and I get some weird little 4x6 window that says select first boot device.
All right, what you're going to have to probably do, it sounds like getting back to a restore point isn't going to work for you. What I would suggest you do is get your CD or Windows XP.
Yes.
And do an install over the install. Now, for you other folks out there and you want to catch this, because it's easy to say, oh, go check out online how to do this, but if you're out of luck and your computer isn't working, you can't do it. So the easy thing to do is you put the CD in.
Okay.
And you'll see it flash on the screen, hit any key to boot from the CD. You hit any key, whether it's the enter key, space key, whatever. It will take you to a screen. You're going to see install Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
There's also down at the bottom of the screen, it says repair. You don't want to select it at this point. You go ahead, say install. Then it's going to load a lot of stuff. You're going to then have to hit the F8 key. Once you hit the F8 key, you're then going to see another screen where you can install or do a repair. The second time you see the repair, this is now after you've hit the F8 key, you will see repair down the bottom. You select repair at that point, and what it does is reinstall Windows over Windows. All your settings, all your programs, all your email, everything else will all still be there. It just repairs the Windows files.
Ah.
So do that, and you should be up and running.
It sounds great.
Okay, sir?
I thank you much.
You're welcome.
There you go. That was easy enough, wasn't it? Our next caller... Ken from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Our pleasure.
I took apart my son's computer this morning just to do a little clean out. We have forced air heat. It gets a little dusty around here, so I decided a can of compressed air to the fans and to clean out the machine was a good idea. So I did the two case fans, the power supply fan, the video card fan, and the CPU fan. I put everything back together. Now when I power up the machine... it stays on for about 3 or 4 seconds, and then it promptly shuts itself off. And the only way that I can try and power it back up is to actually reset the machine, in other words, the power of the machine, by turning off the power supply with the button on the back.
When you did the CPU fan, did you reapply the thermal paste between the CPU and the fan?
I actually did, yeah. I just came back from the store. I bought some silver oxide. I put it on the bottom of the heat sink, and I'm not having any luck with it.
All right. Now, the thing of it is, though, did you put the fan on the correct way?
So it's blowing in the right direction.
Well, no, not necessarily that. When you remount the fan onto the CPU, there's a certain way it's got to go on because there's like usually a little lip to it.
Okay.
And that lip has to be setting a certain direction, depending on how your chip is, so it makes actual contact with the CPU. Because if it's shutting off automatically, it sounds like it's overheating. In other words, that fan mounting, when you put it back down on the chip and put that paste,
mm-hmm.
you might not have put it in the correct direction. If you pull that off, you're going to see a flat surface and then a little lip, and that's got to mount on there correctly. You might want to turn it 180 degrees to see if it's going to mount, because it sounds like it's overheating because it's not making contact with the CPU and the fan unit.
And maybe next time, don't take the CPU fan completely
off. You don't
off.
Have
just
to.
Blow it out when it's in the computer.
Yeah, right. You can just blow it out while it's on there.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and you at 20 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Back to the phones in a minute, but you should know, Livia is looking to buy 1.2 million Linux laptops. The OLPC, One Laptop Per Child Nonprofit Association at laptop.org, told the New York Times that a deal has been reached in Libya for 1.2 million laptops. Libya is going to pay the OLPC $250 million. It gets 1.2 million OLPC computers for students, for kids. They also get one server per school, a team of technical installation advisors, satellite internet service, and other network network infrastructure. This deal has not yet been confirmed, but the article in the New York Times was listed among the OLPC news items on that organization's website. That makes Libya the fifth country to express serious interest in the inexpensive student laptop, $100 per laptop. The others are Nigeria, Brazil, Argentina, and Thailand. The OLPC project has the support of AMD, eBay, Google, Nortel, Red Hat, several other companies. So it's pretty neat. It comes with Fedora Linux and Sugar, which is a modified version of the GNOME user interface. So it's great to see that a lot of the third world countries are getting their kids involved with computers at an inexpensive price. It's a great deal. Our next caller is Amy from Caledonia, New York. Welcome, Amy. What's your question?
My problem is I live out in an area that has no good internet, no DSL, no broadband.
Yeah.
So I have dial-up, and I'm very frustrated. And I have a G5 iMac I got back in May, and I was hoping that I could get Verizon or some...
Right. There's two solutions for you for the outlying areas. Verizon now has their new wireless broadband, which uses the cell phone network.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally enough, Jesse Group just became a Verizon wireless dealer.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So we can sell the Verizon card. So they have an Express card that you put into your MacBook Pro. And they're also working on a USB card for computers that don't have the slot, like the MacBooks and some of the older laptops as well.
Okay.
So you can get a cellular card that uses the EVDO system and uses the cellular network for broadband, and you get 600 or 700K, sometimes peaking up to a megabit,
mm-hmm.
which is significantly faster than dial-up.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is satellite for stationary computers, and they both the interesting thing is they both run about $60 a month.
Right.
The advantage of the cellular network is that if you use your cell phone, a lot of the newer mid-range cell phones have EDVDO capabilities,
mm-hmm.
like the Motorola Razr. You can add data tethering to your cell phone for only $15 a month.
Oh.
So if you want to be on the internet and talk on your cell phone at the same time, then you need a second cell phone for your computer. But
okay.
If it's the computer or the telephone, then you can use your existing cell phone.
Right, but these cards that you were speaking of, they work for laptops.
Right. The Express card is for laptops, and the USB card will be for any computer with a USB port.
Okay. And would you know, like, when they're coming out with the USB card?
Soon.
Soon.
Not shortly.
As near as we can tell, right. So the other alternative is to use your existing cell phone if it has EVDO capability. Or you can
And then you can plug it into the computer.
Right, plug your cell phone into the computer and then get the Wi-Fi.
And that's the $15
wireless
a month.
Broadband, yes.
Wireless broadband.
Wireless broadband to try to differentiate it from Wi-Fi. And Verizon has a great commercial of somebody in a coffee shop trying to use their computer for business, and you know, the screaming kids, and the busboy keeps looking over his shoulder. And so now with cellular wireless broadband, you don't need to be within that 100 foot of a Wi-Fi spot. It's 3 or 4 miles of a cell tower.
Gotcha. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. And of course, Steve works for the Jesse Group.
924-1920
out
in Victor. So we can sell cell phones and the wireless. We specifically got the dealership so we could do the wireless broadband. A customer of ours brought in one of the cards like a year ago and said, make this work on a Mac, and we did. And so, oh, that's cool. Let's become a dealer for that.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, our next caller is Lynn from, where are you calling from, Lynn? Lynn?
Hello.
Is this Lynn?
This is Lynn.
Where are you calling from?
Clymer.
Spell that.
C-L-Y-M-E-R.
Oh, Clymer. Okay.
What did it sound like I said?
We had
a different spelling.
We had a different spelling here. That's okay.
I understand.
Rob does a good job.
Rob does a great job normally. Every once in a while, the wax in his ears builds up, and he mishears something.
How am I supposed to spell it? I spell it like it sounds.
Clymer, C-L-I-M-B-E-R, yeah.
Hey, Rob, I got to defend you. That's the way I would say it.
Thank you.
Rob.
All right.
Rob, pull out your copy of the Constitution. Look in the lower right-hand corner, and you will find the name George Clymer.
Hang on, let me get that.
That's exactly right.
Actually, I just opened it up, ClymerNewYork.com.
There you go. All right, what's your question, Lynn?
I have two at the present time, but first I'd like to apologize. I called you back in February, and after I downloaded the program and listened to it, I realized that I had been talking over you guys. So I would like to apologize first.
Oh, no.
That's entirely all right.
Happens all the time.
Anyway, my questions are in regard to Firefox. My first one is, about a month ago, I had Firefox open, and something occurred here in the house, and I spun around, and when I looked back at the computer, I had apparently dragged my mouse across something, and I deleted everything on Firefox. And I was wondering if there's a way of making a copy of Firefox that would contain all my bookmarks.
Well, that's not in Firefox itself. That's in a preference file on your hard drive.
Yeah, the file is actually called bookmarks.html.
Okay.
And that's under...
somewhere under profiles.
Under your profiles.
In the invisible application and user data folder.
And a lot of that stuff you can export out to a floppy disk. Save your settings, your bookmarks, and all that type of stuff. You can export that out to a file.
Right.
Now,
If you click on the bookmarks menu, the third choice is Manage Bookmarks. On that window, if you click on File, you can export all of your bookmarks to wherever you want them. Then on, if you ever want them back again, you simply say import. Mm-hmm. And you can change the name. It comes up by default as bookmarks.html, but you might want to call it like 06-10-15 Firefox
the current
bookmarks.
Date, yeah.
Right. And then you simply save that anywhere you want, and you can bring it back anytime you want. So that was, and Lynn, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So that was that. That's pretty easy.
Now, on the second part of the question,
mm-hmm.
and this is for a buddy of mine.
Yeah,
he's just
sure.
getting into computers and only been at it for about a month, and I've only been at it for about a year. But he called me to help him, and I did, and he's got was given an old HP with 98 SE on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out, and I wanted to put a firewall on it, so I tried putting Zone Alarm on, and it wouldn't work. So I went to the other national computer show, and I found a name for a firewall, and I tried that, and I got it installed anyway. And I said this was in regard to Firefox. Then I installed Firefox on there after I got a firewall up and tried to do some more, and it keeps popping up a window that says this program has performed an illegal operation and will be shut down. And then it says continue and options. You click on continue, it shuts you down. You hit on options, and there's like probably 40 different things that I would have to go Google to figure out what in the heck.
Lynn, one thing you might want to do to save yourself a lot of grief and aggravation is to uninstall that firewall program that you installed for him and get Zone Alarm.
Said he couldn't install Zone Alarm.
It should still work.
The other thing you need to be aware, well, it may not work with SE anymore if he downloaded the newest version. You need, of course, to be aware, Lynn, that SE is not supported by anybody, and new versions of software are not guaranteed to work on it.
So you have to find an old version necessarily.
Right. So the problem may well be that this new firewall you bought doesn't work correctly with SE, and I don't know what to tell you about that. Nobody supports it anymore, and nobody has software that works with it anymore. You might want to think about putting a version of Linux on that thing. There's a version for older machines with lower RAM and lower speed on them, and that's called Damn Small Linux. I believe it's at damnsmalllinux.org. I think we've already got that up as a link. So you might want to check that out.
Can't say that on the radio.
It's the name of the product. I'm not saying it.
All right, I'm sorry.
I can't say Dang Small Linux.
I got to hit the no-no button over here.
They go look for the wrong thing if I say Dang Small Linux. They don't know what to look for.
It is what it is.
All right.
All right. All right. Our next caller is Jim from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. Just picked up a new Mac Pro.
Congratulations.
And playing with boot camp. And I have a couple of issues. Number one and most important is I've got a wireless keyboard, which the Mac side detects perfectly. But with Windows, I've got to cycle the keyboard on and off several times before the Bluetooth sees it.
Have you loaded the latest 1.1.1 boot camp drivers?
Well, I would assume I have. Is there an easy way to check it?
Go to the Apple website and download. Make sure you download it.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what version you currently have, what version it is when it downloaded. If you look at the Bootcamp Assistant, it should tell you what the version is.
Okay, we'll do that.
And then, secondly, you need to get the Windows drivers specifically for that keyboard as well.
Okay. Now, source for that?
The manufacturer of the keyboard.
Okay, well, this is the Apple Bluetooth keyboard.
Oh, then that should be included in the boot camp drivers.
Yeah. Okay, because when I installed Bluetooth, you know, they have you go through the process of creating that CD with all the drivers on it.
Right. Yeah, the first versions of boot camp didn't support Bluetooth devices very well.
Yeah. Well, I just did that last week, so I suspect I may be up to date.
Not necessarily. When you buy a product from anybody, and it's not just Apple, it's anybody, they manufacture it, they stick it on a truck, it goes to a store, it gets put on a shelf, and somebody buys it. That process can take 2 weeks, it can take 6 months. So you may have, no matter what device you buy, you should always go to the website and download the latest versions of the drivers to guarantee you there's at least one version newer than what's on your CD, no matter how new that CD is.
And it could be one of the firmware updates you need to load on your MacBook before you download the before you install the boot camp as well. The SMC firmware is, and it's all on Apple's boot camp page as well. That you have to make sure you've got the latest firmware loaded before you run the boot camp to make sure all the drivers are supported right. And we actually had a customer this week not quite understand how boot camp works, and for the rest of you that don't, the latest Macs that have come out this year are based on the Intel Core processor. So there was a lot of people very excited about that, meaning you could run Windows on your Mac for those specific Windows programs that don't have Mac equivalents. And a lot of people... earlier this year, there was a big hacker effort to figure out how to do that, And like the week after they did, Apple released their own program called Bootcamp. So Apple's Bootcamp program allows you to partition your hard drive and then install Windows on that second partition. And you can easily reboot the computer into Windows and reboot again back into Mac. We've had a couple of people that have not quite understood how that worked and installed Windows on their Mac just from a Windows CD. And then not quite understand what the erasing your hard drive line meant. And so they removed all the Mac-ness from their new Mac, and they have a pure Windows computer, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, right. Doable, at least.
It's doable, at least, yeah. But if you want to run Mac and Windows, you need to use Apple's Bootcamp. Or there's another program called Parallels that you have to purchase. Apple's Bootcamp is currently free. If you purchase Parallels, you can run what's called virtualization, and that lets you run Windows in a window on your Macintosh.
But you need a lot more RAM.
Right. Since you're running two computers at once, you need a lot more RAM and sometimes a heftier computer.
Right.
So with Bootcamp, you...
But if you do that, you can then run both simultaneously.
Simultaneously. With Apple's free Bootcamp, you reboot your computer into Windows, and it has full access to everything in the computer and runs pretty zippy.
Right.
So it's Apple's Bootcamp webpage, the 1.1.1 version... doesn't list actually when it came out, but that's the latest version of the drivers. And part of the Bootcamp process is you make Windows drivers for all of the hardware in your Mac, which is common with Windows people needing to worry about drivers, but that's very new for us Mac people. We don't have to worry about drivers. You plug it in and it works.
Right.
I like the idea of Parallels personally. If you've got a hefty enough machine,
yeah.
Not having to switch back and forth, not even to reboot, but just simply switching back and forth. Now, can I also have a Linux?
Right. Another advantage of Parallels is you can run any number of OSs. Bootcamp, it has to be XP SP2. Right. So it's you have the cheap way with Bootcamp, or you have the convenient way with Parallels that costs money.
Well, and for a developer, the ability to be able to develop a product that runs on all operating systems, test them, check them, do all that stuff is nice.
Yep.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lintz, and me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Lintz.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Apple. Apple is taking on Office, but gently. They're doing it gently. The next version of their iWorks productivity suite will have a spreadsheet application, currently codenamed Lasso. This will be an iWorks 07. It goes to bat against Microsoft Excel in the consumer and small office space. The new application will arrive in addition to upgraded Pages 3 and Keynote 4 programs, which are Apple's current answers to Word and PowerPoint. Lasso will lack the depth of Excel, but Apple expects the software to strike a chord with the many spreadsheet users who don't require extremely specialized functionality. Lasso will support importing of both Excel and Apple Works documents, and will also be able to save spreadsheets in the Excel format. It'll have about over 200 functions and feature limited integration with the internet, making it easy, for example, for users to create a spreadsheet that automatically downloads and inputs updated stock market information at a specific interval. I'll tell you what, I have discovered lately that, well, of course, there's the OpenOffice suite, which is completely free, but I've also discovered the joys of Gnumeric, which is a small spreadsheet under Linux that's also free. And AbbeyWord, which is a small word processing program that I think runs on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you need something small and fast, particularly if you have an older and slower machine, and you don't need all the superpower that's in Word or OpenOffice, a small product like AbbeyWord or Lasso or Gnumeric or one of those can certainly do you everything you need on a daily basis. Pretty neat program. It loads fast because it's small. It does what it does very well.
And Apple has had their Apple Works integrated program. In fact, they bundled it with most consumer Macs for 15 years. Word processor, spreadsheet, database, everything the average user needs. And the iWorks suite is slowly replacing the Apple Works suite. In fact, Apple even made a version of it for Windows, the Apple Works suite for Windows. And it mostly competed against Microsoft Works, which is Microsoft's own smaller version.
Yep.
If you don't want to pay $400 for Microsoft Office, you can get Microsoft Works for $100, and it does 90% of what...
And it has full Word in it.
Yeah, well, that's Work Suite, which I think is $150.
Oh, you're right, right.
Work, you know, Word alone is $250, which
right,
is weird.
Right, but Abbey Word is free. It runs on Mac. It, and I'm looking at it now. Yep. It runs on Windows. It runs on Mac, and it runs under Linux, and it's great. It really is. I use it most of the time now. It's a terrific product. It's at abbeyword.org. Steve will put it up
I
on the website.
We already do,
If it's not there already, and take a look at it. It's a pretty neat product, and it's free. I don't know how you beat free. I'm pretty sure you can't. And it does a lot of stuff. It's not, you know, it's not everybody's everything, but for a home user, it's way more than most people use. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Who came in? Oh, us. Thanks.
I need some help. I've got a new laptop that I'm picking up tomorrow. And I wondered if there's anything special I should do or any routine I should follow in preparing my old machine for conversion. My vendor is going to take my old machine and, you know, convert everything on my hard drive over to the new machine. I'm running the same software, which is XP Pro. So,
are you going to keep the old computer yourself in your family, or are you going to sell it to someone?
No, I'm going to keep it in the family.
You can do the files and settings transfer.
Well, it sounds like that's what the vendor's going to do. The biggest thing is you can run the original restore disks that the computer came with, and that
after it gets transferred.
After it gets transferred, that erases everything and puts it back to the way it came from the factory. So the new
user, right out of the box,
the new user can put in their own username and start with their own stuff.
Now, I think the most important thing to note here is that before you send it to the vendor, back up all your documents. Twice, okay. No, I'm serious, because you never know if one backup is going to be bad.
All right.
And you're not going to get another chance once the machine goes to the vendor.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, if you're installing a brand new version of Windows on the new machine, then it's okay to do what Steve said with the old version. If you're transferring your license, then you cannot use it on two machines simultaneously.
One thing you might
I'm getting a new version.
There you go, then.
John, one thing you might want to do... Is now, do you have a DVD burner?
The new machine won't have it. I don't have one.
All right, then what you want to
do... I do have one on our network. I don't have one. I have a home network. One of the other machines does have
it. All right, here's a real good way to do it. Like,
now does not.
All right, wherever it is, the good thing to do is when you do this, there's a program called File and File Settings and Transfer. You can run that on the old machine. And you can save it to the hard drive on the current machine, and you create a folder called temp, and you direct it to temp. Now, once it gets done doing that, that temp folder, you can copy that temp folder, say, to the machine that has the DVD burner, and burn that temp folder to the DVD, and that way it will have all your settings, your file settings, your documents, your email, and everything else that are now backed up. In case something else happens, you can always restore those back at a certain point in time, or at least that point in time that you do the backup for backup also.
Now, since it's a
one file settings transfer on the old laptop.
Yeah, you save that folder and burn it to a DVD. Then it's got all your old emails and everything else and documents and settings. Just in case something happens to at least that point in time.
It's especially important for people who are selling their computers or even disposing of them to erase the hard drive. And if you can find a secure erase program like Norton Wipe Disk, so that whoever gets the computer at the other end can't get your files back.
Right. Very important. All right. We're going to take another break. It is 49 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Hi, everybody.
Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Fujitsu, I'm very excited about this. Fujitsu is going to be offering a portable computer that uses flash memory in place of traditional hard drives. The company will offer a 16 gig or 32 gig flash memory disk as an option with the new B series and machines. Now, this is only in Japan right now. That'll happen late in October. They're going to add a significant cost. 16 gigs will be $670 and 32 gigs will be $1,335. But this is only the start of things to come. They're planning on selling the computers under in the U.S. The disks are made by Samsung and are already found in two Samsung machines. Flash disk has several advantages: longer battery life and a slight weight reduction. Big thing is faster startup. B-series machines will take about 19 seconds to boot to Windows XP Home Edition compared to 32 seconds for the hard disk version. They're also offering a hard disk drive that automatically encrypts data as an option. That's pretty nice. And a new convertible machine running Windows XP Tablet Edition 2005. But I'll tell you what, I'm kind of excited by the concept of flash disks, because you'll get more time on your battery and less chance of something happening to break things once the price comes down, which, of course, it will do at some point. Once the price comes down, it's going to be a pretty nifty thing to have. Our next caller is Tom from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I have an interest in, I've had all of these at one time or another. I've had a Palm Pilot or similar, a database manager like ACT, and some mail merge software. What would you recommend if I want to put all of those things on my home-based computer for scheduling and database and mail merge operations? And have them all work together.
Most of the devices come with their own program that either does its own management itself or links into existing software like Microsoft Outlook on Windows or Entourage on the Mac.
Right.
Well, I don't use Outlook because I use the webmail for security reasons, and I know Palm comes with an ACT system, but will that do is that good enough to do the mail merge? And send out multiple letters to people on the database.
I don't know that it will that it would have a problem with that.
Most of the time,
well, it doesn't have a word processor in it, so it depends if your word processor can access the Palm database,
right,
for the contacts.
Right. Well, or it accesses the desktop, right, to do all of that stuff.
It'll merge into Outlook, and then from Word, you can get to the Outlook database.
Right. Exactly.
But then I got to use the Outlook database as opposed to the ACT database.
No, you can still use the ACT database.
No, there's a program called Enhanced Mail Merge for ACT, which is from actaddons.com. And that merges ACT group fields into Microsoft Word templates. So you can do merge current contact, current lookup, all contacts, selected group, and output that into Word.
So there's also Documents to Go that lets you use Word and Excel documents on your Palm-based PDA.
So either one of those would work, and I would check those out because those will do the job. Well, I can hear from the music in my ear that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the great and powerful Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week at the same time, 11 to 1 a.m. every Sunday. Of course, you can also download the podcast off the website. Steve will have that up maybe tomorrow-ish. Today's Sunday, so maybe tomorrow-ish. And we'll be back next Sunday. Please come to the website at soundbites.org. Check out my website, asknick.com, and securitytango.com. At 57 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks.
Hey, Nick.